Hello and welcome to the Wide Open Air Exchange, coming to you from Gadigal country. I'm Christine Gallagher, and our guest today is Tarina Taite, who's had a varied and interesting vocational life, as you'll hear, including as an elite swimmer turned stand-up comedian. Tarina Taite, welcome to the Wide Open Air Exchange.
Thank you.
Because this program is loosely vocational based,
yes.
Sometimes it's really simple to introduce a person and their in terms of their vocation. Yours is quite complex and
not
interesting.
Me.
I love this. And so what I've settle in here, because this might take a couple of minutes.
Oh, this is embarrassing. Okay. Yep.
So you've been employed as a switchboard operator for a media organisation, a medical receptionist at a sports medicine centre, a customer information officer in the New Zealand Public Service in Internal Affairs, a coordinator in the New South Wales Public Service, it's Roads and Maritime, regional financial administrator for an emergency management solutions company, an administrative assistant for a federal infrastructure project, a project coordinator for a telecommunications company, and an assistant project officer in another section of the New South Wales Public Service. You've studied Spanish language and literature at university, and also for a sports diploma.
Yes.
And you studied journalism.
Briefly.
As well as having certificates or accreditations in producing episodic television.
Yes.
And teaching English.
Yes.
And you've taken a comedy writing course. In sports, you've been a competitive swimmer.
Yes.
Quite elite, a surf boat rower, and an AFL player and coach.
Yes.
You've been carving out a place for yourself in radio and in stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
You've been a popular host here at community radio station 2SER.
Yeah.
And you've also had a crack at getting on the telly on, I think, 4 quiz shows and auditioning for 2 dating shows.
Yes.
Now, did I miss anything?
Another popular host here, Mick Rad. We actually went on one of the shows together and won. So
I
just want to make that clear. Thank you very much, Mick Rad.
Which quiz show was that?
Pointless, which isn't on anymore.
Oh, that's the hard one.
It was. And it was Mick that got us across the line in the last question.
And you got a pointless question.
We got a pointless question. His love of the Parramatta Eels saved the day.
That's seriously impressive.
It was, yeah.
Now, I don't mean any offence to anyone here. There's two ends of the spectrum with quiz shows.
Yep.
There's Family Feud, where you've got to guess what the most common answer is.
Yes.
And there's Pointless, where you've got to guess the least given answer.
Yep.
And you've won the sort of harder
I
version.
Think so. Yeah. Although Mick was also on Family Feud as well.
There you go.
So he's done both ends. Yeah. I even... Have I done any more? There's been probably more auditions, I think. But
I'm thinking some of the things this might say about you.
Oh, yes, I know. Tell me. I'm also an extra in Pacific Rim 2.
I've probably been living under a rock and I should know what Pacific Rim
is. Oh, no, look, it was popular. The first one had, like, Rihanna in it and it was, like, it was really popular in China, so then they found it justified making it. And the second one.
Is it a TV show?
No, it's a movie.
Oh, a movie.
Big action movies. Basically, the Pacific Rim monsters come out and then they create these robots to fight the monsters. And then the second one, I don't even know. I think the robots go bad. But anyway.
Okay. So you've been an extra in a big movie.
Yeah, I have actually. Yeah. And we were wearing full SWAT gear on like a 30, 48 degree day. And all of us were all passed out because it was like full. We're all passed out by lunchtime, and just like they were shoving ice down us. It was a really interesting experience, and highly recommend doing random things like that. To be honest,
Tarina Taite is here with us on the Wide Open Air Exchange today to speak about some of her vocational history. I was thinking about what do those fast and different kind of experiences say about you. A couple of things I thought was multi-talented, ambitious and pragmatic, because there's a lot of roles there that I imagine are partly for the purposes of income generation. You've got to live.
Exactly.
You've got passion projects, but you've also got plenty of experience in sort of the corporate world or in public service, and in you've probably done a lot of job interviews and those kind of things, as well as being a creative person.
Yes,
you possibly have a good aptitude for learning, I'm thinking, because you've done quite different things. Maybe being good at being uncomfortable in trying new things.
Yeah,
being comfortable, sorry, with trying new things.
True.
So, but what's your self-assessment when you look back over your vocational life? Like, do you think about that? Like, what does it say about you? Or
this is a big question. I love, thank you so much for putting it kindly. And I think I'll use those for my next interview. Thank you. I'll just make sure I take those down. That's great. I have two minds about this, you know, and especially someone who's like, I want to be a creative and to take that leap over and leave that kind of security is really hard. And I think a lot of people fall down as well in that part of making that choice. So for me, yeah, exactly that. Pragmatic, but yeah, happy to try new things. I would say though, and that's me too, that's my personality. I'm like, oh, let's try this. I mean, coming to be at 2SER to do radio hosting, that was a long journey. And I never thought, I was told when I was doing my training for ESOL, English Second Language Teaching, I think it is, I was told by my mentor teacher that I had a nasally voice.
How rude! Yeah. Sorry, I just said in a nasally voice.
Yeah, how rude. I had a nasally voice and I needed to work on that. She's like, my husband's this is it, whatever excuse she gave me. And that put me off. I've hated my voice for most of my life. And the irony of ending up doing radio and comedy. But that comment set me back how many years? So that's the first thing as well. You've got to be really careful about that.
Also, yeah. What's that got to do with your ability to be a good English teacher? I don't understand why was she even commenting on that. And also, I think you've got a lovely voice. So I don't. Has it changed or did it used to be more?
Maybe because I swear I was still a swimmer at that time. I really think that like the chlorine like really got in my sinuses as well. My lifestyle made a difference at that time. So yeah, that was a huge probably setback.
Yeah.
I've now reaffirmed where I want to go and I'm just still like tapping into, okay, that's what I'm good at. That's what I can do. Because it's hard sometimes to go, I've got talent when you're later in life.
Well, you are relatively new in the span of stand-up comedy careers.
Absolutely.
What I've heard, I listen to a lot of podcasts with comedians. I'm interested in stand-up comedy. So I hear them talking about their craft a lot.
Yeah.
And it sounds like anyone who's in their first 10 years is new.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And where are you about 6 years in?
I'm 7 years in, I think. And honestly, it makes a difference. And you can now, I can sit there and go, that's a 10-year comic. That's a newbie comic. From two to, you kind of have this big jump from new to two and a half. There's another plateau. I think that's where a lot of people drop out because you do plateau. Because the first 2 years, you're doing all the stuff you've been thinking of and it just comes really easy. And then you've got to, from two to seven, and amongst there, you've just got to push through that plateau.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting one. But going back to what I was trying to ask before is, have I done the right thing by being pragmatic, or should I have taken the leap earlier and just taken the losses and that on the financial side, and where would I be now? So can't really know ever how that will go. I have watched friends recently who have just gone all out comedy and it's paid for them. It's paid off for them.
Because is it about how many times you get up a week? Is that part of it?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's if you can try to live off, if you're lucky, $500 a week, then you can go and do comedy gigs all night and do the things. And there's a lot of people that make that sacrifice and it does pay off.
Yeah.
The flip side is I was a swimmer for a long time. I was swam till I was 25 years old.
Yeah.
I worked part-time. I worked as a gap assistant, sales assistant. I love that in England. It's actually probably one of my favourite jobs. And I work, because it's like the gap.
Yeah. Yeah, we should get that one back up on your LinkedIn.
I should, but that's what I mean. The list is getting too long at some point. At some point, you've got to cut it off. And I worked for British Beach Volleyball as well, believe it or not. British Beach Volleyball, which is based in Bath, which has no beaches near it, and was run by two Australians. It was quite funny. Two Australians and a Kiwi in the office. Yeah, so I've done that. I did that a lot for swimming.
Yeah.
I feel like that actually probably set me back. Keeping on swimming that long into my life set me back financially and career-wise a good probably 10 so years.
Yeah, so yeah. But I understand what you're saying by set me back, but I have a very particular attitude or outlook when it comes to our vocational lives, which is that they're very long.
True.
And there is time, and you don't have to find the, you know, there is, we do live in this kind of hyper specialized world that does reward people who start something when they're two and continue doing it till they're 40. Of course.
Leanne Rimes, I just saw that interview.
But it is possible to change course, to change tack, to come to things later in life, and then still have another 30 years of doing them.
Absolutely.
Even though you're 40 now, but you're going to be doing it for the next 30 years.
Yep.
And of course, it's natural to think of the time I lost, but I think more so what you gained, what you're bringing into this new experience now, is all of those lessons that you've learned from swimming, from all those other jobs, from every other experience you've had. You've got probably more to say now as a comedian than if you were 20 and making a go of it then.
I would never even have thought that that was, maybe I would have looked into acting, but I never ever thought stand-up. Even when I did the course, it wasn't about doing stand-up. It was about learning how to write stand-up. So we touched on the journalism course in there as well, and that was at Macleay College, which is locally, and recommend, but super expensive to do because, you know, I'm funding it myself. And I got in there, I could see where it was going to go. Probably could have gone down that road, but I backed away for whatever reason, and then found script writing as an option, and found that, oh, hang on a minute, because I found that journalism, gonna get in trouble here, is potentially more fiction than fiction. Yeah, yeah. So, and it's barely objective sometimes. So I thought, it's not even really me either. So,
I think it's healthy to be skeptical, particularly about mainstream media and mainstream journalism. Tarina Taita is our guest on the Wide Open Air Exchange. There's so much we could speak about with Tarina's vocational history. She's been an elite swimmer and a stand-up comedian, among many other professional roles. It's more difficult to choose a path, I think, when you're talented at multiple things. I mean, your aptitude for sport is, it's probably hard to ignore. Like when you go, I'm really good at this, or I'm a really good swimmer, then you possibly going to put a lot of time and energy into something that you're naturally talented. Or I don't know. Is it natural? Would you?
For sure. Naturally. The family has natural swimming talent. Mm. I happen to be the one that took it further. From 8 years of old age, I wanted to make the Olympics. It was just, I never knew why, but I just wanted to make the Olympics. I had a few hiccups along the way for an accident at 13, and then that took a while to come back from. But I still got pretty close.
Yeah. You're in the media. You were to give people a sense that we're not just talking about you being aspirational.
Yes.
You were training with the top coaches.
Oh, yeah, I trained with Liesl Jones. Mm. I was training with Jeff Hugel before he finished up as well, big names too, and that was in Brisbane. Yeah, no, I was definitely up there. It's one of those weird things that, when you're aiming for something so specific like that, it's point, when I say to someone, I missed out by 0.5 of a second maybe, which is actually quite a lot in swimming, but it's not in the scheme of your life.
Yeah.
And you train 25 years to miss out that
much. By half a second,
by technicalities as well, by a bit of bad politics, which I then took them to tribunal. You can read all that in life.
Yeah, I did have a quick look.
It's quite long.
I wasn't going to bring it up on your
No,
behalf,
I'm happy but, to. Yeah. No, I'm happy to. Like, you know,
Should we just explain what that is very briefly for someone who's listening?
Basically, I wasn't selected. It wasn't just me. In the Olympics, you can qualify when you do the relays. You qualify the country, right? And anyone can take those slots. But to really, really make it short, basically New Zealand had a slot. You only get 16 teams in the world get to compete in that event. And they went, no, we haven't made this qualification part that we've set up. Then we're not going to take the team.
Which meant you weren't then able to be part of the Olympic team in Beijing, was it?
It would have been for Beijing, 2008. Look, and I say, I should have qualified myself.
Mm. So if you had qualified for a solo event, you would have been going.
I would have been going.
So the event that you were qualified for was the relay.
Yeah.
But the New Zealand Olympic team people decided not to enter the relay, which meant you were no longer able to go to the Olympics.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's huge.
It's even more complicated than that. And I'll say one thing, that they made sure that the men's team went.
Mm. And their reasoning was that the team's qualifying time would have meant you weren't in contention, so they didn't really want to spend the money on you going if you weren't going to be a medal prospect. Was that sort of it?
Yeah, pretty much. At least five. I mean, New Zealanders, I mean, we just won our first gold medal at World. So we don't, you know, making the finals probably was where they would expect us to go. And we did make the finals at Worlds 2005. So it isn't, I mean, that's a whole speak on itself. But yeah, it was absolutely, I mean, here's my dreams. In my head, I was going to leverage being one of the few Māori Olympic swimmers to then sort of go into a media career that way.
Okay.
Yeah. So that kind of was my thought pattern.
Establish yourself as as a public person.
Yes.
Have a public profile.
Yes.
And then move into media.
Yes.
Now, this is really interesting because what I've been thinking a lot about with your radio and your comedy.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you said you've had this thing about your voice, like your literal voice.
Yes.
But I was wondering whether radio and comedy has been about finding your voice or perhaps a place to share what you want to say or who you are. And I don't know whether it's a voice or a forum or both.
Yeah.
And that's interesting that if part of the drive or the goal, long-term goal...
Yeah, well, post-swimming career
post-swimming
goal.
Is it that you just found another way into
I know what you're saying. As I'm saying to you, I hadn't even realised myself how it's all kind of come about full circle again.
Yeah.
I didn't even realise. It was, I'm not sure what my drive was, and you're right, I guess I have always had a voice. I've always been... My middle name, I'm not going to say what it is. It does mean big mouth, like that.
Yeah.
It literally means big mouth. I've always sort of had a drive to have a voice of some sort.
Mm.
Yeah. And I think I like to think as well that pragmatic side of what can I do after I've finished swimming too, because I didn't want to be a coach, even though ironically I am a coach now of another sport.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be a coach. And, you know, you spend so much time on a poolside. Like I'd had enough of that. But to be able to kind of, a lot of people walk out of those careers. They go to Olympics, you know, even your Olympic medalists in this country, because it's kind of so common, they then go to what we would say like normal jobs. Like they go then to do their second career, and a lot don't, you kind of almost turn your back on the sport.
Yeah.
Because you're not,
done with it.
You're done with it. You've achieved your goals. You're done with it. And I think there's a big dip and a big lack, and you know, I try and think about it now because I'm so far removed from it, is what did I learn and what can I bring to my everyday life, and because I don't want to say those 25 years were a waste, because they absolutely weren't, but sometimes seeing how you can use your previous, my real first career, because it was my, you know, I did get paid a little bit, and it was my full-time thing I did.
Elite professional athlete.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, like £50 a week, I think. But I don't, yeah, I do wonder sometimes how that all sort of fits into everything now. Yeah.
It is also, it's a fairly rare experience. It's almost in the realm of celebrity in a way that not a lot of people experience it. It happens in a way that's very intense, and also I don't know all of the psychology around it, but I imagine it's a difficult thing when you have aspirations and then afterwards, anybody there to look after you and help you to readjust into leaving the sport.
I'm much better now at that, because it was happening too much. I look at the big ones like NRL and I think you could be doing better.
Yeah.
I've spoken about that many times. But they've really gotten a lot better with that. And that's why they help you get your university degrees as well when you're at that level. They make sure you've got a plan post, because it's a serious thing that happens. Post-Olympic depression is very real.
Yeah.
Because it's the highlight of your life. And it is sad to me that I never got to experience it. But I did get to go to Worlds, and that was, you know, close enough. But yeah, that getting over that took long to find out who am I. And I'm pretty good at moving forward. That's one thing too. I'm really good at like picking up and reflecting and moving on.
Yeah.
Sometimes maybe I don't give it enough time to really absorb what's happened, but that's my drive. Yeah.
You're listening to the Wide Open Air Exchange, and our guest is Tarina Taite, who's been very open about some of her vocational experiences, and particularly there about her background as an elite athlete, as a swimmer. And is also a stand-up comedian. another kind of maybe common theme across some of your experiences is in performance, because swimming is a kind of performance.
Absolutely.
Radio is a kind of performance. Comedy, it's definitely standing up on a stage in front of people is a kind of performance. Mm. Is there, do you think there's something intrinsically in you that is a performer?
I would have to agree. I've been fighting with that myself for a long, long time. And don't be surprised if I turn around and I do something completely different again as well. Because
yeah.
I've almost got two sides myself as well, where I really want to be someone who helps people. And in my mind, that was always potentially like the police and things like that. So I've looked at that a few times. And then I think if I was in New Zealand, maybe I would have gone down that road as well.
Mm.
We just have a different system over there. And then I've got the other side of me that needs to perform.
Yeah.
So it's quite to marry the two together. So it's an interesting, I think maybe it's that dark humor.
Yeah. And the giving, was that what you were saying, like a giving or a caring or a service kind of, you know, is that where the English teaching motivation
no,
came
and
from?
I will give this as a piece of advice. That was actually Mum's. Our whole family are teachers, by the way, and I almost buck the trend.
Because that is a kind of performance, standing in front of a classroom.
100% it is. And I tell you, the days that I was like, I don't want to get in front of the class right now, because you have to turn it on. You can't come in and be like, you have to perform. So it's all, and yes, so that probably is the way that our family are all teachers in some format. And but no, Mum gave me a very smart, she said, you can always travel and do this anywhere.
Yeah.
So that was smart mum talk, that one.
Mm.
Smart mum advice.
Yeah. But so you can't imagine moving into teaching yourself?
No. I will. I know I will at some point. And I'm here and I'm coaching now. Like, how am I not doing that again? So I can't. I'm just one of those, like, trying to be a black sheep, but I'm not.
Yeah. I'd be interested to hear more about young Tarina.
Yeah.
And especially because, you know, you just sort of mentioned a family full of teachers.
Yes.
What was your sort of upbringing or family environment? Or I'm thinking when we, I know there's always many stories.
Yes.
There's always different ways, lenses, but thinking kind of around the vocational, or do you think there were things in the way that you grew up that had influenced your choices? I know these are big questions.
No, it's okay. And it's hard because, you know, it wasn't an easy childhood.
Yeah.
What was
that like?
Ooh.
As much as you want to share.
Yeah, I still probably am going through the process of figuring out what that is now myself, you know, what that was. There's things I'm learning today now. So I would say also, it comes to you when it needs to come to you. Yeah.
And your answer now might be different to what it is in 5 years.
Agreed, yeah.
But was it a regional setting?
So I grew up in Fielding. It's a small, but not small for New Zealand, farming town. It's been named the most beautiful town in New Zealand by the district of Manawatu, where the town is. So many years ago, most beautiful town in New Zealand, and it took me till like about 5 years ago to realise this, read the small print.
That's like world's best fish and chips, but it's been named that by the fish and chip shop owner.
Literally named by Bob and Jill down the road at the pub. So I grew up...
But there's some sense of pride then that you had as a kid that I live in the most beautiful...
100%, because we're like Fielding, and they're like, but it's the most beautiful town.
Yeah.
No. So it's, it's like the World Series. America has a World Series.
Yeah, but there's only US teams.
Yeah. I grew up in Fielding. It's a reasonably small town in the scheme of things, but probably about 10,000. It's a mix of town and farming. We've got the oldest stockyards, I think, in the southern hemisphere. Dairy farming from the Manawatu, where I'm from. And then we have like Palmerston North, which is like 20 minutes away. And Palmerston North was, I'll say this, John Cleese called it the a-hole of New Zealand.
Aww.
So,
okay.
Yeah, so a comedy hero, like just a rag on where I'm from, but yep.
Now, I don't know whether it's a trope in stand-up comedy, but there seems to be this thought that people who are funny or who are good at stand-up, it's because there've been some difficulties. They've been outsiders, or they've had hard times, or there's been tragedy, or there's a reason that they've come to be able to laugh at the world, because there is a kind of catharsis in finding the humour in things.
Yeah. If you know about comedy, tragic comedians is like a really popular trope.
Yeah, but is it? Is that?
Oh,
is
it's, true.
It's true.
It's true. And I have done my best comedy when I've been my lowest, believe it or not. So anytime anyone breaks my heart, I'm at my best. And I'm hoping to, I was like, I can't be this heartbroken to be that good at comedy. So I would choose to probably be a bit more happier in myself. But no, it's scary how, yeah, it is scary. Because I think you just, I will say this because I know friends who have been through really hard times and who rely on comedy. And comedy, when you're in the moment and on stage, it's the one time, weirdly, you feel you have a bit of control over your life and you have to be in the moment. So despite the fact that you can't really control how the audience is going to behave, there's just something so grounding about it. So it's pulled me through a couple of things, but it's also pulled me down as well. You know, it's that push and pull of performance and arts and trauma and beauty and all that, you know?
Yeah, that's an interesting idea because some people might think of being on stage as a high wire act.
Yeah, absolutely.
And not,
yeah.
you know, being kind of the risk of falling.
Yes.
Whereas you're saying that in that moment, though, that you're on stage and performing, there is also a sense of control.
Yeah.
Is that because it's your job to control the narrative, the audience, the, like, what, or
could
what
be.
Is, where does
I
the control
I haven't actually
come
ever
from?
Put a, put a, that's a pretty good guess. I haven't really ever put a, my finger on what it actually is. You just have to be so present.
Yeah.
You have to be so present. If you don't know what word's coming out of your mouth next, gone.
Right.
You're gone. Sometimes I've had one where I went on auto. That's the scariest one. I was so excited about the gig too. And then all of a minute, next minute I'm like, I'm just looking down this tunnel that's like getting closer and closer. I'm like, what am I saying? But you have to come back into the moment.
So it's a kind of mindfulness.
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. And I think also you put everything else out. And you can just focus in on what you're doing.
Yeah. And I saw you do stand up for the first time pretty recently.
Yeah.
I'm so impressed.
Oh, you're so
I do get a bit nervous as an audience member because it can be cringy.
Yeah.
And for me, the best experiences are when I feel like the person on stage has it under control.
Yeah.
I want to feel confident that I'm in good hands. Mm-hmm. That's when I'm having a good time, and that's what you have.
Yeah.
You had a really good command of the stage. You were very inclusive, but not in a sometimes when comedians do crowd work,
aggressive
it's aggressive,
too,
where
yeah.
yours was very inclusive, and you made everyone feel like they were having a night together.
Yes.
And were a part of the conversation, and that's really, really cool. So Yeah, I was so impressed.
Thank you. I just need to figure out how to do it for bigger audiences.
Yeah.
But and that's what I want to feel. That's me. Like, come in and let's have a conversation. Let's laugh together. Let me, you know, that's how I operate. Same. I realize this now too. And I think that's one thing I might say about the voice change. I think people don't realize how that kind of tremor in your voice, you can hear it and they can sense it. And I've seen comics that have shakes. You don't see it, but you can hear the voice.
Yeah.
And so I do think my voice has strengthened over the years. And then with confidence, that to me is the tone of your voice. That's when audiences go, and they relax and they're ready. Yeah.
I've had the same thing in, it's a strange thing to admit when you do a radio podcast program, but I've had terrible performance anxiety.
Oh,
and
this
and doing this has been part of overcoming that.
Yep.
Because you do, it's just immersion therapy.
Yeah, it is. And so I don't judge anybody for going, doing this or going and doing that. If you want to try and face your fears, I'm impressed. I'm actually impressed. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in and doing this. It's been an absolute pleasure and to be continued.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you for thinking that that's interesting what I've done.
See, now I don't know how anyone could think it isn't.
Okay.
There is so many stories, there's so many narratives, there's so many different ways that we could tell your story.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it's complex, because you've done so much and we've skimmed the surface of some of it.
Oh yeah, I lived in Spain for a year as well.
Oh yeah, I was wondering about you studying Spanish and literature.
Highly recommended.
Because you've lived in Spain and England and New Zealand and Australia.
Yeah. And I'm sure we'll add another country at some point. Yeah, I did a high school exchange. So this is, I had the accident at 13.
Yes, again, I'm sure there's a big
story
there.
And that kind of, it sort of looked like, oh no, the swimming wasn't really going anywhere. So I thought, okay, I'm going to take a year off and go to Spain. And then I actually found a swim team in Spain and it brought me back in.
Wow. Yeah. So the universe was tapping you back towards swimming.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tapped me here and there.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Tarina Taite here on the Wide Open Air Exchange. Thanks, T. I'm Christine Gallagher. Thanks to Vape Dads for use of the track Whiskey Priest for the Wide Open Air Exchange theme music. Thank you for listening. Bye for now.